We build on foundations we did not lay. We warm ourselves at fires we did not light. We sit in the shade of trees we did not plant. We drink from wells we did not dig. We profit from persons we did not know. We are ever bound in community. Written by the late Peter Rabel, a UU minister, these words are his version of a passage from the book of Deuteronomy in the Hebrew Scriptures. These words evoke the legacies that others have left to us. Even if we have worked long and hard to become the persons we are today, who we are would not be possible without those who came before us. And this is the case whether we like it or not. Which brings me to my trip home to the middle of Indiana last month. During every visit I make to see relatives and friends in central Indiana, I'm constantly thinking about my identity as a person who moved away long ago. Am I really from here? I ask myself. I know that I am, but I'm also happy to have moved away. So every time I visit, I'm asking myself, what aspects of this area and of these people are part of me? What legacies have I received? What legacies would I rather not recognize? What do I owe to this place? And then, thinking of the future, what legacies do I wish to create and leave for those who come after me? When I visit Indiana, I stay with my brother and sister-in-law in their house in Indianapolis. But I make trips to other cities, including Franklin, my small hometown in the next county. Driving there in a rental car last month on a warm Wednesday afternoon, I had a meal with one older cousin on her lunch hour. Later, I visited her sister in her nursing home. I also stopped in at the local cemetery. It's grown a lot since my childhood, now extending several more city blocks on gently sloping land. Yet I could still find the section in the cemetery where my relatives are buried. I walked around reading the dates on the tall granite stones. There were a few shorter stones near the ground, like one for Tilly Jean Bryant, my mom's sister, who lived 3 days in 1915. I relearned my great-grandparents' years of birth and death and calculated how old they must have been when they had my grandmother and her siblings. Gravestones of aunts, uncles, and cousins brought memories from my childhood, fond memories and bad ones. Both of my parents' ashes are buried there. Instead of tall granite stones, they have low markers flat on the ground. These markers were subsidized by the Veterans Administration, as my father had served in World War II. The concrete base is a rectangle, and on top of it is a raised metal plaque with bronze lettering, each one having the parents' name and their dates. Some crabgrass was creeping over the gray stone and onto the bronze plaque of my father's marker. Someone should trim that grass back, I thought. I'm sure someone will, someone else. Yet grass clippings were scattered around, showing me the groundskeepers had already been through the area. I thought, who visits my parents' graves more often than I do, which is only once a year? Who else would tear the grass out? It's me or nobody. I knelt and pulled away the intrusive crabgrass, making it a little more tidy around the stone. I wandered a bit more around the graves, reflecting on my past and reflecting on what it means now. Before leaving town for my brother's house in Indianapolis, I drove by the two houses in which I had grown up. Didn't stop, just looked at them. 5 minutes later, I passed the house where my mother and her four siblings had grown up. I decided to stop and look. I parked and got out. It's a big Victorian house built in 1902. I've never been inside the house, but Mom had talked about it so much. When I was growing up in the 1960s, the house was no longer in the family and it had been divided into apartments. I remember it had been all white and the big front porch was in disrepair. That was a long time ago. Now all three stories of the house are painted in blue and gray with yellow and purple trim on the windows and the massive porch. I got out of the rental car, walked up the steps and onto the porch. On a white sign on the wall, black letters read, Murray Bryant House, built 1902, restored 2013. Bryant is my mother's family name. Never heard of Murray at all, and I had not known that the house had been owned by anybody before my grandparents. Next to that sign, a metal plaque from the Historical Society noted the architectural significance of this Victorian. I took a few pictures with my phone, and as I was doing so, a large black pickup truck pulled up at the curb. "Can I help you?" said a voice from the truck. "I live here." A young white woman emerged from the truck and walked up the steps. I walked down and said my name. "My mother grew up in this house," I said. She brightened up and we spoke for several minutes. She and her husband had bought the house a decade ago and had been fixing it up, she said. She said, "If you have any pictures of the house or your family in the house, I'd love to see them sometime." I said, "Okay, I'll see what I can find." She referred me to her online blog where she posted pictures of the renovations inside and out. She also had found several old black and white photographs, including a few which a cousin of mine had posted, mostly pictures of his father and mother and one of our uncles. I've been reviewing her website. I have learned things about my family history, thanks to her curiosity about her house. Of course, while talking with her, I thought of the secrets I know, which could make the history more dramatic and somewhat sordid. Who did what to whom? What bad choices people made? What bad habits killed which ones of my relatives? Maybe I won't tell her this part of the legacy. Or maybe I'll wait for a later visit. She apologized that the inside of the house wasn't in shape to invite me in to see it right then. But let me know if you're coming back before you come, and I'll show you around and we can have lunch. I said, sure. And then I said, before I leave, could I take a picture of you on the steps of the porch? She was happy to do so. You can see the colors that they chose carefully, and the landscaping. You can't see, but you could in the other picture, the sign in the yard that says, Love More, which is part of a local campaign to promote civility. I asked what they do for a living. She is the director of high school bands at a school 10 miles away, and her husband works in software. No kids yet, she said. With 6 bedrooms, I guess, they've got room for them. I was touched and pleased to know how much she cares for the house, but also to see how she cares for the history of the people who had lived in the house. And by her passion for restoring that place, she is adding beauty to the town. That's part of her own legacy. Susan Bosak is a social researcher and a co-founder of the Legacy Project. This is Bosak's definition of legacy. Legacy is an interconnection across time. We have a need for those who have come before us and a responsibility to those who come after us. Yet legacy is a complicated matter. Legacies can be unwelcome. Some legacies can be the cause of grief and regret. For example, in this country, some of us live and prosper from legacies that others had no choice in creating. I'm thinking of the native or indigenous peoples whose lands were colonized and waterways taken over and families decimated. And the generations of enslaved Africans and African Americans forced to labor for the profit of European Americans, and whose families were often split up and sold off. We build on foundations we did not lay, says the book of Deuteronomy. The U.S. Capitol in Washington, the domed house of the people, was built by people who were enslaved. Franklin, Indiana, my hometown, was not segregated legally to my knowledge, but the culture of white privilege prevailed. My white grandfather was a business owner and a noted builder. In the 1930s, he was even the mayor of our town. Yet a person of color with the same talents or ambitions as my grandfather would not have had the same opportunities or freedoms that he had enjoyed. That includes the ability to buy a big house for his growing family in a white neighborhood. It is up to us to make sense of the legacies we have received. Furthermore, it is up to us to shape our own legacies, to consider what we wish to leave to the world after we leave the scene. Earlier, we heard the names of Barbara Amberson and Paula Squire. They left money to the congregation in their estates. They passed away last year. Paula had moved away to Oregon many years ago, but retained her affection for UUSS and for the friends she knew here in Sacramento. Barbara lived here and was a member of UUSS for many decades, though she hadn't been able to attend services in her last few years. Their legacy gifts have enabled us to pay down part of our mortgage debt, which saves us future interest expenses. The impact of their generosity will endure for a long time. Yet that is not their only legacy. Paula, for example, worked as a physical therapist and brought up three children. She was a musician most of her life, starting piano at age 5. She was committed to social justice, peace, and a sustainable environment. As a volunteer, she managed the UNICEF shop in town. Paula loved organizing parties and holiday celebrations here at UUSS and at her home. She's remembered as direct and strong-willed, but also warm, loving, and joyful. Like Paula, Barbara Amberson was direct and strong-willed. She was a science teacher with a curious mind, reading voraciously. As a gardener and lover of the outdoors, she was passionate about exploring and promoting the native plants of California and protecting the native plants. Barbara had strong opinions. Religiously, she was a humanist and a staunch agnostic. Though Barbara was devoted to UUSS, I'm not even sure she would use the word religious to describe herself. Yet in making requests for her memorial service, Barbara asked me to do a reading of the 23rd Psalm, the one that goes, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures." She must have gained comfort from those images, from that ancient poetic prayer. I don't think it was a deathbed conversion. Indeed, one of my last visits with Barbara included talking about her memorial service. And she told, as I mentioned, and Barbara told a joke. "Have you heard about the agnostics prayer? Oh God, if there is a God, save our souls, if we have souls." Then her eyes twinkled. Longtime UUSS members recall Barbara's insistent attention to parliamentary procedure at our congregational meetings, making a few presidents nervous. She had a gruff manner, but inside she had a tender heart. As a child, Barbara had years of deep loneliness and fear, a legacy of her parents. As an adult, she cared about those who were left out or hard up. She gave people money, took people in. That's her legacy. Among her legacies to us is the tradition of a potluck dinner here at UUSS on Thanksgiving Day. In recent years, that has brought 50 to 100 people together for food and fellowship on Thanksgiving. She was single all her life and, as I said, dealt with loneliness. And so this congregation was deeply important for her. "It's my family," she told me. The legacies of both of those women extend beyond their generous bequests. That is, the ways that they participated here have made subtle impacts on how we come together and what we do to deepen our lives and be a force for healing in the world. They shaped how we live together in community by being part of the community. So do you. So do you shape how we are together in community by the ways that you participate here. Moreover, by leaving their gifts to us, Barbara and Paula have asserted their faith in this congregation and in our mission. Every time any one of us makes a planned gift or a bequest, we are putting our trust in people we will never know. Such gifts are legacies of trust and love, as well as legacies of money. A legacy is an interconnection across time. We have a need for those who have come before us and a responsibility to those who come after us. No matter how much we make, no matter how much wealth we have, all of us have opportunities to leave a legacy. We have such opportunities every day. We don't have control over where we've come from, and we don't get to choose whom we've come from. And we don't have a lot of control over the legacies that are passed on to us. If we understand our legacies, we can grieve those that come to us from painful sources. And we can give thanks for those legacies that have been sustaining and helpful and inspiring to us. But we can also shape our own legacies. The ways we live, share, show up, speak, and give will give shape to the legacy of our days. We don't control or choose how the legacy will be received or remembered or whether we will be remembered, but we can choose the intentions with which we live. Johann von Goethe is quoted as saying, "Choose well. Your choice is brief and yet endless." Choose well. Your choice is brief and yet endless. What impact would you like to make on the future, even if it won't make you famous? These are spiritual questions that we might reflect on and respond to as we go through our days. Knowing the needs of others and knowing the needs of our hurting world, to which of your values, concerns, and commitments would you wish to give strength and shape in service to our connections across the generations? To which of your values and concerns and commitments would you wish to give strength and shape in service to our connections across the generations? What are the spiritual and moral contents of the legacy that you would wish to build, even if you were not remembered for it? Our choices may not shift the history of civilization, but that's a heavy standard for any person. It's unrealistic. We can't be sure how our lives will touch our descendants and communities in future generations, but we can be intentional. We can choose how we give shape and form to our values now. We can practice living and growing in ways that are peaceful, just, generous, courageous, and kind. In choosing how we will act, speak, and live in the days we are given to live, we shape our own legacy. Our choices matter. As we move through our days, let us remember all those who have come before us. Let us be mindful of all those now sharing life and this world with us. And let us make choices in faith and solidarity with those who will come after us. So may we live with intention, gratitude, and faith. Blessed be.